All right, guys, welcome back to the deep dive segment. And I don't think we're going to go too long on this one. I don't want to limit it, but I wanted to dig more into the comments that I think that were made in that recent interview on the Grant Williams Endgame podcast. And that's where he and Bill Fleckenstein, where they both interview people, and it's Grant has several different shows. There's four different deals that he does, but this one's called The Endgame. And Grant's been on the show several times. One of the nice gentlemen. What you see is what you get in the industry. Also an extremely talented trader and analyst. As smart as he is nice and self-deprecating. But anyway, can't say enough about him. And Bill's been very kind as well. And, you know, offered advice off the air and been very kind with his time. And I think highly of both men. And I also think highly of their guests. I think he's a well-known, if you're in this business and you're obsessed about it like I am, a guy like Harley, that has been very accomplished, very astute, does excellent research work. And I don't, like I said, I don't bring this up to beat my chest and tell you how right I am. I bring it up because, you know, when I say something, it's my take on it. And I am more aware than most people of the shortcomings of me. I'm also, you know, more aware and hopefully honest and transparent about the fact that, you know, I make mistakes. It's not really in vogue, right? We have a joke on Twitter that Twitter's full of a bunch of traders that have never had a losing trade. Or investors never picked a bad stock, right? And that's the way people talk. I'm not into that, not because I am mentally superior to these people. I'm in it because I really care about the craft, and I know, and it's not fun, and it's painful, but I also know that the secret, as Ben Hogan said, is in the dirt. The secret is in the unattractive parts. The secret is in examining your losses. You know, my wins teach me nothing. Like the friend of the show, Mark Yusko, says, with each investment, you get wiser or you get wealthier, but never both, right? We don't learn from our wins. Our wins convince us how smart we are. Our losses show us the blind parts. So again, to say that, I'm not advocating that I'm correct. I'm using this because some other very accomplished gentlemen have come to very similar conclusions. And I think that that's important. It means that we're not just seeing an aberration. Doesn't guarantee that we're correct. But it means that other really intelligent people, other people that are also very intelligent, I should put it that way, because you guys and our clients are the judge of whether I fit that description. And I can just be honest with you, I am not a genius, so I would not grade myself anywhere close to that level. I think my wife would agree. But anyway, he made some fascinating points. In general, and I alluded this on the regular broadcast, but in general, the thing that stood out the most to me, and the thing that I agree with the most, is how he kind of had this devil may care attitude when it came to the relationship of bonds and tips. And not devil may care as in the sense like he was being reckless, just saying like, look, man, place your bets. Who knows? Right. The Fed's hand, its thumb is weighing so heavily on the scale that to assume the traditional relationships between asset classes are going to hold up, in my opinion, is a bridge too far. Now, he also said, look, it's very possible that take is wrong and it plays out. But he goes, you know, when the Fed owns 25% of the tips market, what is the price? The only thing I can really tell you is that the price is different than the one we're seeing. And when I say price, I mean the intrinsic price. What is the market? What is the clearing price of that security? We don't know. Now, is it possible it's the same? It's possible. It seems highly unlikely. Again, I think the most likely scenario is it's different than what we're seeing. And what is also the most likely, you know, and if we agree that the most likely scenario it's different, then I think it's not a very big leap to say that most likely the difference between the current price and the actual clearing price, the clearing price is probably lower. Why? Because if the purchaser of 25% of the market all of a sudden stops, It could go the other way. You never want to say never. Right? But more likely than not, that real price is lower. Where? God only knows. And I think when I sit there and talk all the time about the only thing you can be certain of is uncertainty, and be the most cautious with those that have the most clearly defined thesis and framework, it's for this very reason. If we're being honest, we don't know what the intrinsic prices and the clearing prices of these securities are. We just don't. And in a lot of ways, you could argue that that is the entire point of quantitative easing and monetary policy as it stands today. It's to distort prices. Now, they're not going to use the word distort, because when things are distorted in the way they like them, they call that success. And so do we, right? And this gets back to why nobody flipped out when, in my opinion, the Fed pole vaulted over the Rubicon and started buying corporate debt, and nobody really said anything. Why? Because it made prices go back up. And that's this kind of binary world that we live in. It's like everybody's forgot that going through the hard way is the way to heaven, right? That's the road, right? Even back in Greek mythology and Ulysses and Odysseus, and all, right? You had to go through hell to get to heaven. And everybody's sitting there going, it's the new technological way. We're just going to go straight there, baby. No stops, no layovers. We don't even take a break. We're just going right. We're skipping the work and we're going right to the ripped. And that's just, that can play out that way for a little while. I wouldn't bet heavy that it's going to stay that way. And then the other thing that they went on to talk about were homes. And again, I don't really understand why more people aren't talking about this either. But he said the same thing that we've been arguing. You're not watching homes go up. You're watching rates go down. So people go, oh, the bubble in housing. Guys, just look at the historical price charts. It's been a pretty big aggressive move, and there's certainly a little froth, I think, a little cream in there. But in general, the price move reflects the rates, meaning that the amount that people are paying per home is not outside the long-term norm. But we're all used to, especially the people that are nearing retirement, we think home loans. The number 6 still pops into my mind. You know why? Because the first loan I got for a house was like 6.3% in 2006. I thought that was a killer deal. Right? And so we're all influenced. The people that are the baby boomers, you probably think mortgage and you're probably thinking more in the neighborhood automatically of 8 to 11. Why? Because that's, right, that was your first interaction with mortgages. The first time you bought a home. Right? And those things tend to leave impressions. And then the other reason that when we see the house movements going up the way, oh, it's got to be a bubble. Yeah, in the past, because homes never, you didn't see these runs except in 07 and now, right? But you got to look at monetary policy. The Fed's never bought $1 trillion worth of mortgage-backed securities before. And this goes, this backs up what Harley was arguing originally, which we were talking about. Which is, what is the price? I don't know. Because how do I price an asset? How do I price a market or a sector? What's my discount rate? What security do I base that on? Right? And then if I base that on those securities, is that the actual clearing rate? I don't know, because the Fed's bought up so much of it. For those of you that listen to the regular radio show, we're hitting on constantly and that we've built our firm around the concept of risk management. But this is why. And so, a lot of times when I hear people on Twitter discussing this or I hear people on TV, nobody ever say, right? What is your point of view? What does that mean? It means, where do you think the market's going? And I just think it's such a stupid way to approach this. Meaning we all know that nobody else's guess on any given day. Well, I guess some people's guesses are better, but we all know in the industry, especially the most experienced we are, is that except in a very extreme extenuating circumstances, the most worthless question in all investing is, what do you think the market's going to do over the next 3 months? Nobody knows. And they could get the economic breakdown of it perfect, but something that occurs halfway around the world that was impossible to forecast, you know, comes in and disrupts it all. So you see what I'm saying? I think it's much easier to make predictions about market direction over 5 and 10 year intervals, but that's still not a perfect science either. Now, then you add the fog of war, right? You add, you know, crazy and non-traditional and extraordinary monetary policy that is bad. Why do people do monetary policy? To stimulate the economy. Okay, that sounds great, right? So what do they do? How do they do it? Do they push the stimulate economy button? No, they buy assets. So what are they doing? They're pushing up prices. Now, the leap in logic that they're making, now, I'm not saying they're wrong. I mean, we got a lot of good data sets to point that it doesn't work the way they say it does. In terms of if juicing asset prices was the way to stimulate economy, then the biggest, longest bull market in the history of the U.S. that reaches record valuations should not have occurred during the same period of time where we have the slowest growth in real terms, the slowest growing decade in U.S. history. Right, so that would intimate to me that at the very least it works different than those that the Fed would have you believe, and most likely what they truly believe themselves. Right, because it's a big leap. Can they influence asset price? Well, they've proven that, in my opinion. Now, does it lead to economic strength? Maybe in short term pops, but that, right, the efficacy of monetary policy driving real economic growth, there's at least as much evidence to suggest that is not the case as there is that it does, right? The proponents would say that growth would have been much worse had they not done that. Again, that's kind of a moot point to me because how do you disprove that, right? They could be right. I don't think they are, but they could be right. But you can't disprove it. But the one thing that every rational player in this business should be able to admit is that we don't know what real price is, and I think that fog or that opacity applies to the entire market. And again, I could be wrong. But getting back to my original point, this is why I get so frustrated. People are like, what do you think is going to take place? Where do you think the market's going to go? Rather than discuss what we should be talking about, which is risk management, because nobody's navigated a market like this before. And then I think the other thing that people need to realize is quit looking for the guy. Quit looking. And that applies to me as well. 100%. Quit looking for the guy that you think's got the answers. And I've said this a million times, but I think it begs to reinforce this. I think it's that important. If you got a guy that's got all the answers, it's going to tell you exactly how it's going to play out. The only thing I'm confident in is it's not going to play out the way he thinks. Not over the long run. There's too many unknowns. There's too many discrepancies. There's too many anomalies. How do you price it? I don't know. Where should the stock market be at if the Fed pulled out, you know, accommodation? I don't know. Where would rates? I don't know. None of us do. If we're being honest, it's like one of my clients. Now, we are not day traders by any stretch of the imagination. But one of my clients is like, you know, why are you guys making so many trades? And I said, look, first of all, we're not. You're used to owning mutual funds and ETFs, so you just see a ticker symbol. You don't see, right? It's like the duck, right? Everything's calm below the water, but the feet are going like crazy. You know, running a portfolio is very much the same. You know, you call it a trade. I call it trimming a position that's up 150% in 3 months, right? That's portfolio management. But we are trading more than we have in the past. Why? Because I don't know. I when I get what I want out of something, I'll typically, at the very least, take some off the table or sell the position outright. Why? Because in a market that is this far from norms, you know, that the advantage of holding that asset long term is significantly less. And how do I know? Because it's gone up so much already. Now, is it possible that that ascension into the ether continues? You know, for a while it certainly is. Is it sustainable over the long run? No, but what's the long run? Is the long run 5 years? Is it 10 years? Is it 20? I don't know. Do I have thoughts? Yeah. Got a lot of thoughts. The way I think in general this plays out is that you get the Fed trying to normalize, maybe a little bit of tapering, maybe threaten a little interest rate move, and then rates start moving aggressively too higher. Economy begins to slow down and responds very quickly to it. You get another deflationary scare. Fed pulls back off the brakes. Maybe we throw some more stimulus into the mix. Right? Why do I think it's going to happen? Because that's what's played out over the last 15 years, and I don't see any difference. As a matter of fact, I think the Fed is more involved. Meaning I think the Fed has a lot less wiggle room than they did 5 years ago. Why? Because they've pushed it up that much higher. They've bought so much more stuff. Right? They're leaving a bigger footprint. The bigger the footprint, when that foot moves, it's going to suck up more stuff. Right? It's going to impact more things. So I just sit there and go, look, if you think it's getting better, if their balance sheet is growing, the market's getting more and more increasingly dependent. I think it's kind of that binary. But remember, the money there's, I mean, look, you know, like we said last week, and we pointed this out before, you know, Brent Johnson was pointing this out, you know, for those of you who are like, hey, this dollar is going down, man, I'm telling you. Well, eventually, yes, of course, but the timeline really matters. And if you're telling me it's because of fundamental reasons, I will remind you that the DXY was in the high 70s in 2007 when there was 63% debt to GDP. Okay, today we're quickly approaching and we'll be at 150 if we're not already. We're pretty darn close. But 150% debt to GDP and the GDX, the dollar index, is 20% higher, 25, somewhere in there. That should tell you all you need to know. Yes, I am aware. Government's printing more money and racking up more debt. You would expect their currency to go down. I'm with you, right? It makes a lot of rational sense. However, I got to go look at what the market's telling me. And over the last 15 years, that ain't been the case. Now, then the next question I think a rational person asks themselves is why? And that's what led me to dig into the plumbing of the financial system. And it's what Brent and I talked about at great length for an hour on the last deep dive we did. Slightly more than an hour. And I'd recommend you go listen to that too. Not because I'm so brilliant. Not because Brent's so brilliant. But I think you can learn, you know, we had a joke in there where we said, listen, we, you know, the people that, when you say that you think the dollar is going to go higher and that could cause some serious problems, oh, you're a dollar bull, man. You're an idiot. Don't, you got to look at the debt. And I always laugh because I'm sitting there and Brent and I were joking around saying that to me, the ultimate evolution of a dollar bear is when they become a dollar bull. Because now they really know what they're talking about. Now they've really dug into the financial system. And the only people that really, and this is the thing about, kind of circles back to your defeats being the things that, the reason I started digging into the financial system and started understanding that the dollar going up was the Achilles heel was because from 2011 to 2013, inflation wasn't showing up and the gold mining stocks and gold that all the gold bulls are and inflationistas we're touting, we're getting hammered. And you're sitting there scratching your head going, but they keep ramping up QE and the government debt's climbing. What is it? Right? Once again, that failure, that loss, that defeat, and it was relatively temporary, but that defeat was what led me to dig into the financial system and go, what is it you don't know? Something isn't working the way that you thought it was. What did you miss? And what I missed was the plumbing of the financial system. And this is why it goes back to me in an environment like this. You know, I don't make a lot of specific recommendations on the radio show because I can't. There's regulatory reasons. You know, I wish I could be like Cuppy and some of these other guys that are like, oh yeah, you got to buy this, you got to buy that. I just can't do that legally. But the other reason why I don't do it is because I don't want people to have those positions in their portfolio based on what I've told them, unless they are doing or you know, what we're doing or even know how to do what we're doing, which is, you know, saying, yes, we think that this is how it's going to play. We think this is how it's going to work, but we also have a backup plan for if it does not. And what is that called? That is called risk management. And we have a point where we are going to exit no matter what. And we know full well that there are times, well, that will cost us gains. We will get out too early. Why are we okay with that? Because we are not okay with the alternative. We are not okay with risking the complete annihilation of the portfolio because we thought something. Not in an environment like this. You know, people, well, you just got to invest in value and hold it. This goes back to the point that Harley Bassman was making, and I am too, which is, okay, what is that price? Where is that price that you'd buy this no matter what? What is the current price? What would that price be if the Fed quits buying that? Or lets interest rates go higher? Or whatever the case may be. At the end of the day, you don't know. And to some degree, that's always the case in financial markets, but not like it is today. Not, you know, if I don't know what and I point to it because the most influenced markets are the biggest ones that typically act as that discount asset, right? The asset that we're using at the very bottom of the care, the pillar, the rock bed of the pinnacle, I guess you'd say, of the capital structure, which is U.S. Treasuries. And if that's off, right, it's like having a kink at the top of the chain. I don't know what it'll result in, but I'll tell you that, you know, that kink will impact the way the rest of that chain works or hangs or whatever the case may be. And so in that environment, you know, where in the past the price was 100% my guideline, you know, whether it was too expensive or there was too cheap, or cheap enough to buy, right? I we can still look through that lens, and I think it's a valuable lens, and I think prudence would require us to continue to look through that lens. I just think we need to do it with a much lesser degree of certainty than we have in the past. And even those things that look abnormally cheap, they still need to be risk managed. You know, this is not an environment where I feel like, well, you just buy this and tuck it away in your cabinet 10 years from now, you know, because I don't know, because prices are already so exorbitant. And yet at the same time, I don't know that things can't double from here. People are like, well, it's ridiculous. Why? You went through the greatest economic shock in the history of our country. Not in total scope, but I'm saying it, never before had we endured an event that had a more violent and sudden impact than coronavirus. Never. And the stock market doubled in the next, was it 10 months, 11 months, something like that? You know, so, I mean, if you've got a guy that knows how this is going to play out, I just give him my number, would you? And I think you'd be well to go listen to that interview. And I'll give you a recommendation. I know I'm not supposed to give recommendations, but I'd sign up for Grant Williams. I've said it before. I just think it's an excellent program, and it's not very expensive. I think you get a lot of bang for your buck, and he puts out a lot of great content. But I would go look. I'd go read, go listen to that segment with Harley Bassman. And even if you believe me, even if you're like, Zach, no, we believe, just hear it from somebody else. Hear another perspective, because he makes points about long-dated options and things like that we haven't discussed. And he's got a slightly different take on it, too. And I'm just saying that I think it's an astute observation. He also talks extensively about the breakdown in the relationship between bonds and stocks, which is a big part of our thesis about getting out of bonds. Again, if you have an advisor that hasn't talked to you about this, I don't know what they're doing. If you're an investor that's sitting there managing your assets in this way, I don't know what you're doing. Get out. You know, as crazy as the stock market is, I think stocks make a lot more sense than bonds. At least I've got a chance to win. Right, with bonds? Yeah, I mean, fine. Yeah, you belly up to the bar for 2.5% with a CPI at 1. Or excuse me, at 5.1. Be my guest. Hey, and look, you could end up being right. Maybe it could be a good investment. I'm just saying, if that's the logic you use, right? If you make decisions like that on a regular basis, I just can guarantee you, you're not going to be successful over the long run, because that's just it's a ridiculous addition of risk with it's almost like, you know what, man, I'd like to really juice up the risk in my portfolio and lower my overall returns by a good 2.5% a year. Said nobody ever, but if you're on a bond portfolio right now, that's effectively what you're doing. Now, again, is it possible that that's going to be the asset you should own 2 to 3 years? Yeah, it is. I mean, rates go. I'm just saying you're threading a needle. Right? It'd be like the Seahawks on 4th and 3 inches lining up with 4 wide receivers and throwing a deep ball. Could it work? Yes. Is it the highest percentage of success? No. Matter of fact, that's what an offensive coordinator get fired for. Financial advisors are going to get a pass. But I think when they don't convert on 4th and 6 inches, which they're not and they haven't been, then I think the advisors will start to pay the price. And unfortunately, that's just the way this industry goes, right? We've talked about that before. It's just human nature. We don't make changes in anticipation of pain. We make them in a realization of pain. I've said that many times, but I don't think that can be too far. I don't think that can be discussed enough because it is so true. Anyway, that's about it. I just really wanted to sum up and go into a little bit deeper a dive into that interview with Harley Bassman because A, I agree with him, so you know there's my bias coming out. But he approaches it from some different angles, and I think that what he says, and Bill Fleckenstein says that several times in the interview, it's like, look, what we're saying here really isn't debatable. This is just the statement of fact. And I love that because, you know, I just always kind of roll my eyes when somebody kind of goes on this tangent, and I'm like, okay, we left facts about 5 paragraphs ago. And I want to stick to facts because what you think and conjecture don't really do a lot for me because I've got those same things too, right? And we could both just as easily be right or wrong. But what are the facts? How do we look at the things that we know? Because those are the only things that we can really focus on. You know, that's why I always say managing risk, right? Because the only thing I have absolute control on as an asset manager is my risk exposure at any given time. It's the only thing I've got 100% control over. Or should have 100% control over. Anyway, I hope you guys found this insightful. We've got some really cool deep dive guests coming on over the next couple of weeks. And, you know, as always, if you've got ideas or people that you'd like to hear us interview, shoot me a DM on Twitter at KYR Radio. I'd be happy to hear some ideas. And if you have those ideas, I'd remind you to go back through our podcast to make sure we haven't had them on because we've had a lot on. Anyway, I hope you guys have a great weekend. Take care of yourself. Like I said, we're going to have some great deep dive segments coming up in the next week or two. So make sure to check back and hopefully we'll keep them coming your way. Anyway, thanks for joining us. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.